Neely Tucker joins us by phone tonight. He's a longtime staff writer for The Washington Post and has covered wars and civil disturbances around the globe. He's also the author of several books, including the Sully Carter series. And tonight we're going to talk about his latest book in that series. It is titled Only the Hunted Run. Neely?
Yes, how are you?
I'm delighted to welcome you to Around Cincinnati. I want to start by asking if you would to describe for those who might not be familiar this rascally, very likable main character you have of Sully Carter.
Yeah, Sully is sort of a piece of work and a handful. He is a reporter in D.C. He has his psychic and physical scars from his youth growing up. His mom was a homicide victim back home in Louisiana, a tiny little town there. And then he becomes a foreign correspondent and was blown up covering the Bosnian War. So he has a very colorful attitude and disposition. And he's trying to fight his way back from alcoholism, from the post-traumatic stress disorder that he has. And he's putting his life back together in the form of dropping into some really difficult crime situations.
Well, and indeed, from page one, we find him in a very frightening situation. So what's happening in the Capitol building?
Sully is filling in the Capitol and reporting up there when a paranoid schizophrenic comes into the building and starts shooting people, which sounds kind of crazy, but it really happened back in 1998. A paranoid schizophrenic named Russell Weston walked into the Capitol building. He shot two guards and almost got to the Speaker of the House's office before he was tackled. And that's pretty much what happens in this instance, except our fictional shooter, Kerry Waters, gets much further in the building and is much more effective at what he wanted to do. And he winds up killing a representative from Oklahoma by stabbing him through the eyes with a pair of ice picks. Highly symbolic and grisly crime. But that sets up the mystery for the rest of the book, is why he did that. It's not a whodunit, because we know that. So why he done it.
Well, one of the most terrifying things in your book is not a madman, but a madhouse, or both, known seemingly by the innocuous name of St. Elizabeth's. And it has a famous or infamous history. And perhaps you can tell us about that. And this institution still exists, so why you chose to include it?
It's just sort of this Gothic masterpiece. St. Elizabeth's is on this hill just across the Anacostia River from downtown or federal D.C., and it overlooks the capital city. It began as a mental institution just after the Civil War. And for a long time, it was, you know, sort of the cutting edge in mental health care in the United States. It had a national mandate. People were sent there from all over the country. At its peak, there were 7,000 patients were there. So it was this huge facility. But it was also the home to, you know, a lot of the not really great mental health practices that existed back then, in particular in lobotomies. One of the doctors here, Walter Freeman, did not practice lobotomies on site, but he did in town. And if you've seen American Horror Story and the lobotomy in there, that's exactly how they did it. He literally took an ice pick and started driving it up under the eyelids of patients to sever part of the neural cords connecting the front and back parts of the brain. And he wasn't alone in that. This was done all over the country. This was cutting-edge stuff, man. Now, of course, it's horrifying. And St. Elizabeth's follows some of that history. By the 1970s or so, it had lost its national mandate. Institutionalization had gone the way of the dodo bird, and it becomes this very sort of run-down, sort of horror show of mental health. That's sort of the world in which it is, in which we find it in this book.
Well, I think one of the important things your book highlights is the connection between mental illness and violence. We certainly see that happening repeatedly in this country. And while we're on that subject, one of the things I read that I found fascinating was that you carried on a correspondence with David Berkowitz, better known as Son of Sam, who was a serial killer in New York City in the mid-1970s. So, with all due respect, what encouraged you to start this correspondence?
What the hell was that about? I was working on a story for my day job. I didn't just look him up at my personal hours, but I was working on a story about murderabilia, which is the trade in the ephemera of serial killers and famous killers like, you know, Charlie Manson and Ed Gein, who was the basis for Psycho and Silence of the Lambs and so many other things. And Berkowitz was a huge deal back in the 1970s, because he had not only carried out a series of serial killings, but he had corresponded with the city's most famous journalist and columnist, Jimmy Breslin. And those letters that he wrote became very famous. So they became very sought after in this business, and that's why I was writing him. He had been in prison, he's become a devout Christian, and really campaigns against murderabilia. So I was writing him for insight about, you know, how he had seen the business work, and people try to use his letters and stuff. So that's why I wound up corresponding with him. But it certainly gave me the idea in this book, for once the killer is Terry Waters is still on the lam, he is corresponding and calling Sully in a similar sort of vein that Berkowitz did with Breslin.
You, in your own life, you hail from William Faulkner country. You grew up in Mississippi. There's a wonderful quote from Faulkner in Only the Hunted Run about making a scratch on the face of oblivion. And it occurred to me that you certainly had done that in your career and ongoing career as a journalist. So what made you decide to write fiction? How did that come about, specifically crime fiction?
Well, a couple of things. One, I always wanted to write fiction when I was a kid growing up in Mississippi, but I didn't know anybody who, I grew up in a town of 2,000 people. I didn't know anybody who wrote. I didn't know you could actually do that. I wound up in journalism, a writer down there named Willie Morris, who had a great career up in New York and elsewhere. I met him, and he had suggested going into journalism as a way of, you know, writing sentences and learning your craft and your trade. And so I was going to do that for a couple of years and then, you know, write the great American novel. And I guess I'm a very slow learner because I worked in newspapers for about 25 years before I got back to writing fiction. And I think I picked crime stories because, you know, Faulkner himself, a lot of his books are based on violent incidents. But I lived in Detroit for a number of years and wound up being friends with Elmore Leonard, the legendary crime novelist. And so when I wanted to write my own books, Dutch was very much in the forefront of my mind about how to do it well.
I am also thinking that you have hopped around the globe to all these hot spots, civil wars, violent upheavals, and now you're based in Washington. What's the transition like?
It's a little crazier than every place else. I think what's different is that in a lot of my foreign career, I was in, as you had mentioned, a lot of far-flung places, not necessarily at the centers of power. And D.C. is just sort of the opposite of that. You are at the apex of power. That's been interesting to watch how that works.
I started by asking you to describe Sully Carter, and I'm wondering if you could tell us what you think the most important ingredients are in having a character who is, I hope, going to be with us for a long time. Certainly he's been with us for several books. So when you were creating him, does he live in a space in your mind?
Oh, yeah, he very definitely does. And I think in any fiction, the thing that really propels you through, and most particularly in a series of books, or in film, like in Game of Thrones or in Breaking Bad, your characters can do very bad things, but they have to be fascinating, and you have to really want to see what's going to happen to them, right? And the more unpredictable they are, the better that is for everybody involved. You want them to, you know, if somebody's just a straight-up hero all the time, like Gary Cooper in High Noon, the day for that sort of figure was sort of past. But I think the interesting thing is sort of you start with these tropes or these ideas in crime fiction and thrillers, and as soon as you start with the trope, you know, the troubled investigator, detective who's an alcoholic and he's putting his life together, okay, that's a standard idea, but then you start subverting that idea. Because as much as you want to try to figure out what happens in mysteries and thrillers as a reader, you don't really want to. It's this kind of little striptease act that you do. You want to, you know, tantalize people, but you don't get to the big reveal until the very end.
Oh, and you do it so well. Thanks so much for visiting with us tonight.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
I've been talking with Neely Tucker about the latest book in his Sully Carter series. It is titled Only the Hunted Run. You'll find more information about it at wvxu.org/AroundCincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.